This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Yehiyesu Wuhib in Washington. Here is what's coming up on Africa News Tonight.
COVID is really something that we're all grappling with on the continent. And this is really an event, an opportunity for us to relax, to listen to good music like we usually do in Africa, but to also have some solidarity and to also pass on some critical messages around COVID and how we can stop the spread, as well as how we can prevent it for ourselves.
That's the head of the Red Cross and Red Crescent movement in Southern Africa on the two-day Africa Together Festival being live-streamed on Facebook starting today. Details coming up also. The stalled talks over the Grand Ethiopian Renaissance Dam are about to resume. And Nigerian economists warn the loss of revenue from slumping oil sales could hurt the country's economy and cause a recession. All these and more ahead on Africa News Tonight. We start with our top story. One of Africa's leading virus experts says there are many more COVID-19 infections and deaths on the continent than the numbers currently indicate. Professor Sahabir Mahdi specializes in infectious diseases at Wits University in Johannesburg and serves on South Africa's Presidential Advisory Committee on Coronavirus. Dyren Taylor reports.
Mahdi, who's also trying to develop a vaccine for COVID-19, says he's very concerned that the extent of the pandemic in Africa is hidden in a cloud of confusion.
Much of it is underpinned by a huge amount of data that have become publicly available. But at the same time, that really sort of lends itself to a number of problems in terms of either being misrepresented or, at worst, allowing for complacency to set in terms of the true status of COVID-19.
Statistics from African governments and international health organizations show the continent, with its population of 1.3 billion, has less than 2% of global infections.
So you need to ask yourself the question, is this something that's biologically plausible? Is there some exceptionalism to Africa, which is basically protecting its citizens from developing COVID-19, or is there something else at play?
To answer, Mahdi casts his mind back to January 2009, when swine flu hit the world.
The African continent and South Asia, in fact, reported the least number of confirmed cases of swine flu in 2009. Yet, at the end of the first year of that particular pandemic, more than 52% of all of the deaths that occurred from swine flu were found to have occurred in Africa and South Asia.
Mahdi's making the point that Africans have zero special immunity from coronavirus. It's just that some governments are ignoring its damage, and there simply isn't enough capacity to test and treat all the infected and to register data of cases and deaths. To explain further, the virologist compares COVID-19 in South Africa and Nigeria. Both countries were red flagged by scientists at the beginning of the pandemic because of their interconnectivity with the rest of the world. Nigeria has a population almost four times greater than South Africa's 58 million. South Africa, with about 38,000 infections and 800 deaths, is the worst affected country on the continent, according to state statistics. Official numbers put Nigeria's COVID-19 cases so far at just 11,000 and 300 fatalities.
Now, is it biologically plausible that Nigeria, with such a large population, is actually better off than South Africa when it comes to COVID-19? And the answer to that is simply not.
The answer to the disconnect between official statistics and reality, says Mahdi, is to be found in testing regimens.
South Africa, right now, we're doing about 10 tests per 1,000 of the population. In Nigeria, they're doing 0.2 tests per 1,000 of the population. And consequently, it shouldn't come as a surprise that there's more cases diagnosed in South Africa than there is in Nigeria.
The professor's sure that Nigeria's pandemic is much worse than is currently thought. He says the same goes for many other African nations, including Zimbabwe. It's officially recorded just 4 deaths and a little over 200 infections. These numbers, says Mardi, do not reflect reality.
Most of the cases in Zimbabwe were actually people that were returning to the country from South Africa, and they were needing to pay for a test in US dollars to be tested. Under this scenario, you simply don't expect to find much reports of COVID-19. The absence of the report of COVID-19 doesn't mean the absence of the COVID-19.
And that, says Mardi, is the prism through which Africa's pandemic should be viewed, rather than the blind acceptance of officially reported low infection rates and deaths. For VOA News, I'm Darren Taylor in Johannesburg.
Ahead of the anticipated resumption of stalled talks over the Grand Ethiopian Renaissance Dam, GERD, project, Ethiopian Minister of Water, Irrigation and Energy, Seleshi Bakala, says the talks, also involving Sudan, were being clouded by Egypt's tendency to recall and confirm the so-called historic rights in water, which can never be accepted by Ethiopia or Nile-sharing countries. Egypt and Sudan have no problem with the construction. However, they have concerns on the timetable of filling the dam and operate it. VOA senior analyst Mohamed El-Shenawi spoke to Joseph Siegel, director of research at the Africa Center for Strategic Studies, about chances for reaching a compromise against potential military options.
I think what the minister's statement is getting at is that underlying all of the negotiations and tensions is some fundamental differences of opinion over control of the waters of Nile. And Egypt has been pushing to retain sort of the 1959 agreement, where only Egypt and Sudan had claims on the Nile's resources. And this, of course, left out the other Nile River countries, including Ethiopia. And the whole genesis behind Ethiopia's decision to build the dam is the understanding that the Nile, or access to the Nile River, would need to be renegotiated along some sort of new transboundary cooperation agreement that would lead to more equitable sharing. And so that is the underlying tension about whose vision for access to the Nile will hold. And during the process of negotiations, the understanding has been that, yes, there has to be some sort of updating to this 1959 understanding. And the latest pushback we're getting from Egypt is being perceived from the Ethiopians as an attempt to roll back that understanding back to the 1959 status.
Egypt and Sudan have no problem with the construction of the dam. However, they have concerns over the timetable of filling and operation of the dam. Is Ethiopia willing to compromise?
I think Ethiopia has indicated that it is willing to compromise. And indeed, there has been a technical committee that has been working on these issues for some time. And with some degree of collegiality and cooperation, I think most experts would say that there is a medium point at which Ethiopia can fill up the dam and use the water stored to power its generators without harming the downriver countries. But that is going to require some dialogue and cooperation. You know, it's going to require compromise. Ethiopia is going to have to fill the dam more slowly than it might want. And Egypt is going to have to understand that, you know, that those resources are shared. So I think compromise is needed on all sides. I think Ethiopia has indicated that it is willing. And I think some of the posturing we're seeing is simply a means of each side to show that they are resolute and that they're going to pursue their stakes in this issue.
But Ethiopia failed to attend the final day of the last round of negotiations in Washington when it was due to sign an agreement drafted by the U.S. in collaboration with the World Bank on the filling and operation of the dam. Could the three countries reach an agreement without U.S. involvement now?
I think they can. Remember that for most of the time of the negotiations, there hasn't been a party to the discussions. The U.S. only came into this in January of this year as a means of trying to provide an outside venue to facilitate some of the discussions. But all along, the three countries have been negotiating. And for the most part, again, most of this has been at the technical level where there was considerable progress being made. I think where the negotiations get into trouble is when they get politicized and they move to the head of state level or the foreign ministry level. And then you have a lot of other dynamics that come into play that make it harder to reach a compromise from all sides.
So failing to reach an agreement, could the possible scenarios include military options, especially that there is military tension right now between Ethiopia and Sudan and some calls in Egypt for a military action?
We can't rule out military action. And when any time tensions are rising and politics gets into the mix, you know, there's a risk that it could escalate. There were recently some border skirmishes between Ethiopia and Sudan. Those are unrelated to the dam, and it seems they are being resolved diplomatically. I think the broader risk that we need to keep an eye on is if Egypt feels threatened by Ethiopia's filling of the dam and feeling that they're going to end up with an agreement that puts them at a disadvantage. I think then the risk is that Egypt may try to launch some sort of attack, either, you know, covertly or overtly, to try to hinder the operation of the dam. And, you know, the calculation may be that because the world is distracted with COVID-19, that they could carry out such an action without many repercussions.
That was Joseph Siegel, Director of Research at the African Center for Strategic Studies, speaking with VOA senior analyst Mohamed El-Shenawi. Zimbabwe's recent sharp rise in COVID-19 cases has reignited concerns about the government's capacity to contain the pandemic's spread. Reporter Kudzai Musenge brings us more.
The number of positive cases in Zimbabwe more than doubled in the past 2 weeks, with most of the new cases recorded among returnees in quarantine centers. As of Tuesday, the total number was 206. The returnees are being sent home from neighboring countries, mainly South Africa and Botswana, and some have been escaping from quarantine centers without completing the stipulated isolation period, raising concerns of a further increase in infections. Information Minister Monica Mutrangwa recently told journalists that government is increasing security at all the centers where returnees are being kept, including schools, colleges, and hotels. The Information Ministry has also created a hotline number while asking people to stop harboring those who flee quarantine as well as those who return into the country through undesignated borders. Some of the returnees complain they are held for too long in the quarantine centers without adequate assistance. A Zimbabwean physician based in the U.S., Dr. Simbiso Ranga, says the rise in the number of cases is worrisome and there is need to speed up testing among the returnees and the community at large to determine the extent of the spread of the disease.
A policy that would focus on ensuring that the places where there's a high chance of internal spread, like a shelter or a school, emphasizes the need to get those people tested early would probably be better, obviously. But I think one thing that needs to be done better is to increase testing. This has to be ramped up so that we can have a better understanding of the extent of the disease throughout the country.
Physician and former health minister Dr. Henry Madzorera told VOA that beyond the public awareness on preventing the spread of coronavirus, there is also a need for a robust campaign to educate the returnees.
The people must be educated on why they are being put in quarantine. They must effectively be converted to believe in the quarantine itself. Once our people are educated properly, they normally follow instructions. On its part, the government must ensure that there is adequate food and adequate water and other necessities for living for the people in quarantine so that no one ever sees any need to go outside of the quarantine area.
Madzorera also reiterates the need to quickly and frequently test the returnees.
As the returnees come into the quarantine area, they must all be tested so that we separate those who need isolation because they are positive and those who need quarantine because they are negative. And then testing must go on regularly at intervals perhaps of 3 or so days to ensure that anybody who seroconverts, who becomes positive during the time of quarantine, is separated from the rest of the people who are still negative. That way will minimize transmission within the quarantine area, which is very important. And they must all have an exit test.
Though government relaxed lockdown measures a few weeks ago, state security agents have reverted to clamping down on what they deem unnecessary movement by citizens across the country. Some people were being barred from getting into Harare and other cities Tuesday. A police spokesperson told local radio stations that police are enforcing the lockdown requirements in the wake of rising COVID-19 cases. Reporting for VOA from Bulawayo, I am Kudzanai Musengi.
The International Red Cross and Red Crescent Movement and Facebook are partnering Africa Together, a digital campaign and two-day festival starting today that features artists from across Africa to encourage continued vigilance against COVID-19. Mavis Ochera in Ghana has more.
With more than 100,000 coronavirus cases confirmed on the continent and containment measures easing in many countries, Africa Together combines musical and comedy performance with information around COVID-19 first respondents and fast checkers. Dr. Michael Charles, head of the International Red Cross and Red Crescent Movement Southern Africa Cluster, says the event mixes entertainment with expert tips on how to stay safe amid the pandemic. He says popular Nigerian actor and comedian Basket Mouth is co-chairing the live stream Facebook event today in English with performances by Aremide, Ayofemi Kuti, Salif Keita, and a host of other musicians.
COVID is really something that we're all grappling with on the continent. And this is really an event, an opportunity for us to relax, to listen to good music like we usually do in Africa, but to also have some solidarity and to also pass on some critical messages around COVID and how we can stop the spread, as well as how we can prevent it for ourselves.
He says the need for this campaign was informed by issues around risk communication that needs to reach communities as people peddle false information and miscommunication about COVID-19. Charles says the goal of the partnership with Facebook is to reinforce the need for people to continue hand washing, maintaining physical distancing, and wearing masks to help prevent the spread of COVID-19.
So really partnering with Facebook has given us leverage because we're already sending health messages running on Facebook, you know, to their users in 48 countries already across Africa. So the impact really and the purpose of partnering with Facebook is we're using this event to reach as many people as possible, both English and French, and really making sure that our voice is heard.
Charles says the campaign is also highlighting how the pandemic affected people's livelihoods.
We will be able to continue to highlight not just COVID, but the effect of COVID. As you know, COVID should not be seen from a health perspective alone. We need to look at the various ramifications around COVID. We need to look at issues around food security, issues around floods, issues around livelihoods, issues around people losing their jobs, issues around people not being able to put food on the table. So with this event, we're making sure that we're highlighting those aspects of COVID, those aspects that we're seeing in the communities.
With a network of more than 1.5 million volunteers across the continent who are already dealing with conflict, violence, and climate disasters, the International Red Cross and Red Crescent Movement is combating COVID-19 through information campaigns, providing soap and access to clean water, and supporting healthcare facilities and workers. Reporting for VOA, this is Mavis Autry in Ghana.
As Americans are still protesting the death of George Floyd, the Gambian government is calling on the United States government to conduct what it called a transparent, credible, and objective investigation into the death of one of its nationals. Police say 39-year-old Mamadou Lamine Cisse was killed after he failed to pull over as instructed for vehicle registration tag violation and then fired on officers. Reporter Panderambai reports from Raleigh, North Carolina.
The Gambian government has instructed its embassy in Washington, D.C. to mount pressure on the United States government to investigate the death of Mamadou Lamine Cisse. The son of a former Gambian United Nations worker, Cisse was shot and killed in the town of Snedville on May 29. The Georgia Bureau of Investigation says he failed to stop his car when police tried to pull him over about 3:45 a.m. After a chase, the Bureau says Cisse's car stopped and police surrounded the car. The GBI says he refused to get out of the car and then pointed a gun at officers. The GBI says the Snedville police requested assistance from the Gwinnett County Police Department and his team tried to negotiate with Cisse to leave the car. But he fired on the officers and they fired back, killing him. Pa Sambajau is a Gambian human rights activist based in Washington, D.C.
This is a very sad situation, but not very surprising, given the realities of this country. So definitely when I heard the news, it really hit home, because for a very long time, Gambians and Africans have acted as if police brutality is just meant for African Americans. But I think over time, we've been proven wrong over and over again. So it really brings it home to all of us.
Joe says there was no justification for the police officer's conduct.
I don't believe that it is ever justified to kill another human being. I just believe that 100%. And as somebody who has no trust for the police, especially here in the United States, because of their history of concocting stories, we know that for a fact that this country here, we've seen so many instances where a black person will be shot, weapons will be planted by the police, and they will cook a story.
The Georgia Bureau of Investigation is investigating the death. But beyond a statement on its website, the agency is releasing no information about the case or the status of the officers involved in the shooting. The Snedville and Gwinnett County Police Departments did not respond to calls requesting for information. Bankamane, a Gambian based in Atlanta, thinks the police overreacted. He says an expired tag should not warrant taking Cisse's life.
So essentially what they are saying, that the man died because of an expired tag situation. That's what we are hearing here, which is extremely, extremely, it's mind-blowing. You just cannot understand how the police, with all their professionalism that they claim to have, will allow an expired tag situation to escalate into a killing of another individual. But it shows you the callousness and the disregard for the lives of black men in this country.
Mane also doesn't believe in the police claims that Cisse had opened fire at them. Mane says they will continue to demand for justice in the case. Gambian human rights activists plan to stage a demonstration at the U.S. Embassy on June 8. Lawyer Asan Martin is one of the protest organizers.
All what we want is to ask for justice, we need that justice to prevail and know what has happened. I mean, this is what Gambians are asking for. Like I say, the Gambian people, all American people and American government, we respect.
Martin says the protest has nothing to do with being anti-American. He insists that there should be justice in Cisse's death. The case comes just days after George Floyd, an African-American, died when a Minneapolis police officer pressed his knee on Floyd's neck for several minutes. That officer has been arrested and charged with murder, and three others have been charged as accomplices. But anger over the death and orders of black men at the hands of police has sparked protests all over the United States with calls for reforms to end racist police practices. For VOA Africa, this is Panderimbai reporting from Raleigh, North Carolina.
And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yehiyesu Uhibe in Washington for all the latest developments on the continent 24/7. Visit our website at voanews.com. On behalf of our producer, Mokbilia Baro, thanks again for tuning in and choosing the Voice of America.